What I want you to do is that instead of focusing on the 50 calls a day, I want you to talk to 5 people a day, but make sure that you're making a difference in their lives of those employees when you talk to them, meaning asking them what they need, how you can support them, being there for them, creating the platform and the infrastructure for them to succeed and thrive at work.
Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Cesar Romero.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Ivy Podcast. In today's episode, we're going to be diving deeper into the world of HR. And if you are a professional in HR or really anyone that's interested in putting people first, I think this episode is for you. We're going to be talking about mainly on what are some of the things that need to change in HR and what are some of the things that you could do to better prepare for the future that's already here. And today I'm excited to bring on Enrique Rubio, who is an HR, tech, and future of work expert and keynote speaker, and he's also the founder of Hacking HR, which is a global community of HR professionals that is at the intersection of the future of work, technology, business, and organizations with thousands of members across the world. He's also the co-founder of Cotopaxi, which is a recruiting platform focused on Latin America. Enrique has written multiple blogs on innovation, management, and human resources. Enrique, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I am really, really excited about this conversation. So thank you.
Yeah, so before we dive into HR, I want to start with your background, because I understand that you were not always in HR. And that you got started as an electronic engineer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. Like what prompted you to make that transition and what was the aha moment?
I lost my way from engineering. I got lost. You know, when I was a teenager, I wanted to be an astronaut and I was thinking back in Venezuela, the place where I was born, I was thinking there's no, you know, anything related to or helping me to become an astronaut here. So the closest thing for me to be that would be an engineer. So I ended up becoming an electronic engineer, which I loved. And I still, you know, love very much my decision to become an engineer. I practiced engineering for about 10 years in the area of telecommunications as a project manager in telecommunications. And then I switched to HR because part of my career in engineering at the very end of my tenure as an engineer, as a practicing engineer, I worked in technical sales. Mm-hmm. And I found out that I really loved having that relationship with people, right? I mean, not that I didn't have it before, but it was a little different being a salesperson. And I said to myself, well, you know what? I'm not sure that I like sales that much, but I do want to work with people and for people. Mm-hmm. And of course I discovered HR. So I switched, I became a consultant in the HR space. My master's degree was focused on HR. Then I worked in the corporate world for a number of years. And then I founded Hacking HR, which started as a community to discuss about technology and HR, which are my two backgrounds. And it's evolved now into way more than that. But the reality for me is that having an engineer mindset in the world of HR has been a mm-hmm. fascinating journey because it really helps you think differently about the work of HR. So I always tell people in HR, you don't have to become an engineer, but do something that is not just HR, you know, practice something different.
Yeah.
Because it's really, really going to help you sort of expand your vision. And this is true, not just for HR. If you're an engineer, go to HR for a little bit of time, or to sales, or to marketing, or to finance. You know, this idea of cross-pollinating experiences and expertise and professional sort of fields is incredibly powerful, incredibly powerful.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, because that's where innovation comes from, right? When, when you take, when you borrow different frameworks from different disciplines, and you just like make your own. So tell us more about the engineering framework that you bring on to HR. Like, what are some of the things that that you implement, you know, that you took from your engineering background into HR?
I'm thinking about something that, that happened very often, by the way, not just, and I am sure that you and everybody listening to this podcast will relate. You know, when an electronic device wouldn't work at home, you know, you would first get really annoyed. You would unplug it or whatever, and then you would punch it, right? You would hit it. You know, what the hell is going on with this device, right? So we in engineering, we do that, right? I mean, I remember working in telecommunications, working with devices. And when you got really frustrated, you would start like shaking something or like hitting it, because you were like, you thought somewhere in your mind that a little cable was disconnected somewhere in there. And that by shaking that thing or punching it, it would connect again, and it would start working. So, so what happens is that, I mean, that, that may be a meaningless kind of example, but the reality is that you as an engineer, you are, sister, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. It's a little, it's a little slow, but we're still in it.
All right. Sorry. It's just that you were freezing.
Yeah, I can. I can.
You're still freezing. Okay. Should I just continue?
Just continue. Yeah. I will let you know if I cannot hear you on my end.
All right. Perfect.
Yeah.
All right. So what happens in engineering is that you have to get really creative with what you're doing. You really have to very often use your imagination about why things work in one way or why things don't work at all. And that's a little piece of mindset that I bring to the HR space. I'm not, you know, one thing that I, my friends in this space, they laugh at me because they know that I'm this way. I don't like rules. I don't like, you know, be bound by, you know, barbed wire, you know, preventing you from going and seeing the world, right? And I feel that in HR, our profession was designed to be that way. It was designed to be as scared of what's on the other side of the barbed wire or on the other side of the wall. We were, our profession, HR, was designed for the people practicing HR to run away as far and as fast as possible from risks, from using creativity, or from doing something that in any way was a little deviated from the standard of the way things should have been. And this is not true for engineering. Yes, there are standards in engineering, there are processes and there are rules, that the only way for you to invent something, to create something new, to solve problems that come via systems or devices, you got to get really creative and you got to really think outside of any given box. Because sometimes in engineering, boxes do not define what the problems or challenges could be. So that mindset really, really helps me in the world of HR. And that's why actually I named this community Hacking HR. Hacking has been considered a technical concept, right? I mean, when people think about hacking, they think about, first of all, they think about something negative, but it's not really just negative, but they think about technology. Somebody hacked the system, somebody hacked the bank, somebody hacked the government, somebody hacked this thing. And the reality is that what hacking is, in the technical perspective, is you go down to the very foundations of whatever you want to change and you hack it. What I was thinking was, I want to go back to the foundations of HR and hack them. I want to change them, because it is obvious that by now, that at the moment that I created Hacking HR, that the traditional HR is not really working. It's not delivering value. So anyway, that mindset of creativity, risk-taking, intolerance to the, to being, to being bound by walls that don't let you see what's out there. That mindset is what I bring to the world of HR from engineering, and it really helps me.
Yeah, no, 100%. And now that we're talking about that, let me say that I definitely agree with you, because I have worked in corporations, right, banks, institutions, and I have definitely felt that way, that HR was there just to, I guess, to follow the rules, right? And it was for the corporation, not for the people, you know? Mm. So what are some of the things that HR, traditional HR, is doing wrong? And what is your vision of what HR could be?
Yeah, great question. I think that by exclusively focusing on the administration and the transaction of processes, I think we are making a big disservice to the HR profession. We're making a big disservice to the corporation or the company or the organization that we work for, and we're making a big disservice to our people. You know, as simple as that. You got an HR professional that is just focused on hiring, firing, ensuring compliance, mm-hmm. and you know, paying people, and that's what they do. You know, we are missing out. If that's all we did, we would be missing out on such an incredible opportunity to, number one, really help the organization that we work for become its best version of itself.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, we in HR are business people. We happen to work in HR, but we are business people. And what we want is, or what we should want, is our organization to succeed. And being just a transactional HR professional, it helps the organization just go day in and day out, mm-hmm. the way things were before yesterday, and the way things will be the day after today. But that's pretty much it. So we got to get out of there if we want to help our organization succeed. Now, the key here is that we help our organizations succeed with the success of the people. Mm. When we build the foundations and when we help our people at work succeed, we are helping our organization succeed. But we don't do that if all we do is hire, fire, pay, and ensure compliance. How do we do that? By listening to what people are going through, by providing them opportunities for growth and flourishing at work, by providing them opportunities for learning, by creating systems, processes, policies that are flexible and can change with the circumstances that we may be going through. We do that by truly understanding what our business, what our organization wants from us, and us translating what we do into something that makes sense for the organization. So the mindset here is completely different. Now, have I even said that we don't have to fire, hire, pay, and ensure compliance? No, I haven't said that, because we still have to do that. But that cannot be our full focus of attention, because if that continues to be the case, we're missing out of an incredible opportunity, as I said before. And I want to give you, Cesar, one example of what I'm saying. Right now, digital transformation is perhaps, you know, one of the most important business strategies, mm-hmm. And business drivers for, you know, innovation and change transformation, and of course businesses staying, you know, alive and thriving.
Yeah.
Now, digital transformation is intrinsically a human process that is supported by technology. Digital transformation is a process that the bottom line is, how do we make our processes better, more efficient, more effective for our internal and our external customers? It's for the people. So it is intrinsically a human process that is supported by technology. Mm-hmm. If this is true, if what I'm saying is true, that digital transformation is a human process supported by technology, who should be leading digital transformation in any given organization? Shouldn't it be the person in charge of the people operation of the organization?
Yeah, it should be.
Maybe with marketing or sales. But that is not true. Who is the leaders of digital transformation are generally in the technology side and mm-hmm. not in the human side. Why is that? The answer is very simple. It is because those who are in engineering, in IT, generally, they know more about the way people work and how to serve them via technology than HR leaders know about how technology works and how technology can serve people. So we are, the gap from us is way larger than the gap for them. So we got to close that gap. And that's why this traditional HR is not enough anymore for us to be the leaders of the transformations, whether digital or people or marketing or any other kind of transformation that our organizations are demanding from their leaders. And we should be stepping in to do that. So that to me is two completely different mindsets in HR.
No, thank you, Enrique, for that. And I had not considered how digital transformation starts in a company. And you're right. The people are in IT, in other departments, they typically embrace that first, and then it trickles down to HR when it should be the other way around. Yeah. And I felt this way when I was working in corporate, right, where I saw HR as a place where I would just go for the transactions, right, to benefits or to fix some admin stuff that my manager would say, hey, you need to go to HR to do this. Or it would be times where I would be like in trouble, I guess, you know, for not doing something that I was supposed to do. So yeah, I definitely agree that it needs to shift from the administration, the compliance to people first, right? Yeah. And with that, I wanted to shift gears to talk a bit about hacking HR, because I am amazed at the amount of work, the quality of content, the quality of speakers, and how you've been able to pull this together. Not just in terms of the conference, but also the community. So I wanted to talk about a bit about that and what have been some of the, I guess, biggest challenges in putting together this level of a conference where you have industry leaders, speakers, and the quality of the content. How are you pulling that off? I guess, you know, that's where I want to get at.
You know, it's just to me, it's a little bit about the way I see most things in life, which sometimes is a blessing, sometimes it's a curse, depending on what happens after you actually make a decision. But you know, to me, it is about accepting the challenge and learning along the way how to do it, how to make it happen. There are people. I'm a runner, so I'm a competitive runner. That's what I do outside of my working in hacking HR, and I remember the first time that I signed up for an ultra race competition back in 2013. I signed up for a 50 miler.
Wow.
By the time I signed up, which may have been like 4 or 5 months before the actual race, the longest I had ever run was like 10 miles or something like that. So I had never run anything longer than 10 miles.
Wow.
Now I signed up for that because I knew that by setting myself up to that challenge, I was going to have to force myself to learn how to get there to that place. I trained, I did the race, which I had no idea how I was going to go. I ended up being physically broken, like really broken. Like my, everything was hurting. Like I couldn't even move for like a month. And I became hooked to it. I loved it. And ever since I learned, and now I know how to do these races. It's the same thing in the world of what I'm doing with hacking HR. It is, I'm going to set up a challenge for what I want to do. You know, I want to, last year, this was at the end of 2019. Mm-hmm. I said to myself, why the hell do people have to pay so much money to go to a conference where 80% of the content is just sales from a marketing company that is selling them something, and the company is also paying to give that sales pitch? So when I was thinking, like, wait a second here. These companies that are organizing these events are making a ton of money out of the registrations, from participants, which by the way, happen to be the same people all the time, because I've been to many of these events. And it's like, you guys, I saw you like 2 months ago in the other conference and last year in the same conference. It's always the same people. And then they get money from that and they get money from the sponsors. And then people to participate in those kind of events, they have to pay for the registration. They have to travel because the events were happening in, you know, in New York or San Francisco or Las Vegas, whatever, Orlando. And I said to myself, I need to change this thing. I can't believe that in this day and age, the only way for people to get access to these amazing speakers speaking at a conference would be to have to pay thousands of dollars to be there. Mm-hmm. And I said, this was at the end of 2019. And I said, you know what? I'm going to organize a gigantic conference and I'm going to put it together online and it's going to be free. And I did it. I had no idea. It's funny because I started organizing about, actually, it was not in November. It was like in August of 2019. Mm-hmm. In November was when I consolidated everything. And even in November of 2019, 5 months before the conference, I didn't even know what technology I was going to use. I said to myself, I'm going to have to figure it out. But let me together the speakers first and then figure out the technology. So that is, to me, the way I address some of these things, right? It is, let me set up the challenge. I accept the challenge. Nobody's putting a gun on my head to say, you gotta get into that challenge. I am setting it up for myself, and then I learn along the way how to do it. For that conference 2020, we got about 11,000 people registered, 225 speakers, people from all over the world, and I did all from my computer. Literally, I was sitting in my computer, and I sat down for an entire week doing all from my computer. This conference that is happening in March of 2021 is larger. We have many more people signed up, many more speakers. There are many areas that I'm still figuring out, but I learned, and now I am in a cadence here of work. So anyway, the bottom line here is, and this is true not just for HR, it's true for anything else in life. If there's something that you want to do and you don't know how to do it, set up the challenge for yourself. Set up the challenge for yourself. You're going to learn how to do it. I'm not talking about the kind of things of like, I'm going to beat Michael Jordan in playing basketball. That's never going to happen. So I'm not going to be stupid to set up myself for failure, right? For something that I know will never happen. But if it's something that I know it's hard, it's difficult, it's challenging, but it's doable, set up the challenge for yourself and learn how to do it. Do you want to go and run a 50 miler? Everybody can do it. Everybody can do it. Set up the challenge, backtrack, and get, you know, and plan how you need to get ready for that thing. And that's the way I see things with Hacking HR. And that's the way I see things with a lot of things that I do in my life. So again, sometimes this is great because I'm like very driven. Sometimes it's like, I'm like 1 week before the thing and I'm like, man, I haven't figured out how I'm going to do this thing.
I love it. I love the story. You know, it's almost like reverse engineering, right? Start with the goal, sign up for the event, for the challenge that you want to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, backtrack, you know, watch.
Yeah. And if you think about it, Stephen Covey in the book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, he said this 25 years ago. He said, begin with the end in mind. It is the goal. You know, there are two principles that are fascinating to me. One is begin with the end in mind, meaning you begin with the why, with the goal. Simon Sinek also says this, right? You begin with where you want to go, what you want to do. And then the second thing is also, as said by Stephen Covey, is everything in life is created twice, one in the mind and one in the actual physical world.
Love it.
So when you set up your goal, when you begin with the end in mind, you backtrack and then you start thinking, you create in your mind how you are going to make that happen. And then you actually make it happen. Mm-hmm. But you got to think how you make it happen. There will be several questions along the way, but that's okay. You will figure it out. You will figure it out.
I love it. Yeah, it's so true, right? Because then you have no choice but to figure it out once you have that challenge.
Correct.
Awesome, Enrique. And let's shift gears here. And I want to talk about the pandemic, right? Because it's a topic that it's on everybody's minds. And I want to ask you, for you personally, you know, how has the pandemic and COVID-19 changed your thinking about the future of work and what that means?
That's a great question. You know, what I think is that we were dealing with so many problems before COVID. Mm-hmm. And now some of those problems, we knew they were there. We just were ignoring them, or we just didn't want to tackle them, right?
Right.
And like, for example, deep inequality. Mm. I'm not just talking about social and racial inequality. I'm talking about technological inequality. Mm. The fact that when you send the entire world into lockdown, you got to make sure that people have internet to connect. You got to make sure that they have a laptop at home to connect, or a computer at home, or a webcam, or headphones.
Yeah.
And we discovered that that was not true. We discovered that a lot of people, actually, you know, more than half of the people in this world, they don't have access to the internet. Mm-hmm. So what the pandemic did was not only it created a bunch of problems in itself, you know, by the pandemic, you know, all this tragedy of so many deaths and people ill because of the virus, but it unearthed many problems that we were ignoring or we were bearing down because we didn't want to tackle them before. And the pandemic made those problems way more evident than they were ever in the past. So that is one thing to me. The second thing is this. I tell people, this is the metaphor that I use. We are going through the dark tunnel of the pandemic. And people always say, I want to see the light at the end of the tunnel. I say the same thing. But what I don't want is that light to be the same kind of light that we left behind when we got into this tunnel.
Yeah.
Because that light that we left behind, it was not working for everybody, and it was only shining upon a few people and not everybody. So if we want to get out of this dark tunnel and not to miss the opportunity to change things so that they never happen again in this way, the light at the end of the tunnel has to be very different from the light that we left behind. It has to shine upon more people, hopefully everybody. We have to be more inclusive. We have to take care of each other. We have to prepare for things, which is another thing that happened through the pandemic. You know, there are many things that we were told were going to happen, and we didn't want to believe that they were actually going to happen. Like, for example, I remember President Obama in 2015 saying another pandemic will happen in the next 5 to 10 years. So the government that we had during the pandemic, you know, didn't prepare for something like that, right? Mm-hmm. Bill Gates said this 10, 15 years ago. He said the biggest challenge for humanity is what if a pandemic like the influenza of 1918 happens again? And we were caught off guard in many different respects. So it is, to me, number one, addressing the problems that were there before that now are amplified by COVID. Number two, it is creating a better, brighter, more beautiful light at the end of the tunnel so that those who were suffering before don't have to suffer again. And we don't have to go through all this pain that society has gone through because the light before was so selfish for some people and not for everybody. And number three, it is preparing for things that we are told could potentially happen and believing that they were going to happen. And I just want to give you one example quickly about this last thing. For the past at least one decade, experts, institutions have been telling governments, organizations, technology, especially automation, will replace a gigantic number of human jobs. Mm-hmm. Do you think we're remotely ready for this? The answer is no. We're not remotely ready for this. And what happens with technology is that it goes at the beginning very slowly. Mm-hmm. But then once you get to a certain inflection point, it starts going pretty quickly. So for example, self-driving cars, self-driving trucks, very slowly, you know, governments are still like, you know, I don't know, safety, all of that. We're going to get to an inflection point where we will get to a place where now self-driving technology is basically, you know, infallible. What's going to happen with the thousands of people that are actually millions of people driving taxis or driving trucks? Most likely they will lose their jobs. Are we ready for that? The answer is no, even though we have been warned about this for years. So anyway, preparing for a future that we are being warned about, but we seem not to believe that it will actually happen.
Yeah, so so many things that I want to talk about here, but I want to focus on members in the audience that got caught off guard because of the pandemic, and now they have to pivot, right, in their careers. Yeah. What advice would you have for this segment of the audience that are trying to prepare, right, for the future, but might not know what to do or what skills to learn, or skill sets, right? Like what would you recommend? What would you advise for this segment of the audience that are trying to pivot because, you know, they either got furloughed, they got laid off because of the pandemic? What would you recommend to them?
Yeah, this is what happens. You know, all that I just said for the person who is very busy sounds like BS, right? I mean, you and Rick, yeah, just forget about that. And I'm going to go back to my day-to-day thing. The first thing is that everybody's busy in this society at work with personal things and whatnot. So everybody's busy and everybody's like, I don't have time to learn what I'm going to need for the next 5 years. I need to learn what I need for tomorrow.
Right.
And that may be true, right? I mean, I know that's the priority and you need to focus on tomorrow rather than the next 5 years. But if you can allocate 5% of your time, you know, 5% of your time, you know, it's, you know, 15 days, you know, 17 days a year to learn about things that even though they are in the back burner of your mind, because you don't need them today, mm-hmm. you may think that you will need them tomorrow or in a year from now or in 5 years from now. Dedicate a little bit of the energy to do that. No, number one. Number two, make sure that whatever you are putting that 5% of your time into is not just in your knowledge silo. What I mean by that is I am a better professional because I am an engineer who works in HR, who also happens to want to learn about a lot of other things like, you know, nutrition and mental health and all those kind of things, right? That makes me better. So if you think you are going to get, if you are a nature professional or an engineer who thinks that you're going to get better just by learning from engineering, if that's your silo, or by learning from HR, if that's your silo, you're making yourself a gigantic disservice because you may be getting better on a vertical that may be significantly disrupted going forward. Mm-hmm. So make sure that as you learn, that you don't learn necessarily vertically or across the board, but you're learning more like diagonally, if you will, meaning you are getting better not only in your own silo, but in other areas that can help you be better in your own work. For example, for me, people in HR, you guys need to learn about finance. You guys need to learn about marketing. You need to learn about technology. Yeah, it's all overwhelming. And people may say, oh my God, that's a lot. How am I going to learn about all those things in such a short period of time? Nobody's asking you to learn to be a professional marketer in a week. Dedicate 1 hour of your week, 1 hour to watching a video about marketing on YouTube. You don't even have to pay for it. You go to YouTube and you go to, you know, Gary Vee or whoever, you know, Seth Godin or, you know, one of these super amazing marketer guys out there. And you look at one video, 1 hour a week. That's it. Next week, you may get hooked to marketing and you say in the next 2 months, I'm going to watch 1 hour of videos every week. And then at the end of 2 months, you say, you know what? I'm going to get certified on this marketing strategy. You never know, right? They may not be helpful at all, but they may be. So number one, 5% of your time, a year, a month, a week to learning of things that may not be the day-to-day thing. Number two, learn about silos that are not your own silo. That's going to make you way better in your own silo or if you need to transition to another silo going forward. And the last thing is, you know, Albert Einstein said that the last human to know everything that needed to be known about the world was Isaac Newton, you know, in the year, you know, in the 16th, 17th centuries, right? I don't remember exactly. I think it was 1600s and something. And Albert Einstein said that because he said all of the books, all of the documentation about science that had been written up to that moment, Isaac Newton had it. In his library, he had all the books. He had all the things. He had all those things. Today, that is just impossible. Nobody can know everything that needs to be known about the world or about anything for that matter anymore. So how do you resolve this conundrum of How do I know what's going on in my field? Get together with people that can inform you, can make you better, and can help optimize the flow of information as much as possible. If you are in a leadership position, make sure that you are creating enough avenues, building bridges and channels for people to come together with you and say, hey, you know, I heard this about HR and we're not doing much about it. Let's just keep it in the back burner of our minds. But you know, you have it in there, because there's no way that you can control or know all that needs to be known about your silo. So 5%, make sure that you're looking at other areas. And number three, collaborate with others that can, you know, optimize this flow of knowledge and information.
Yeah, it's crazy, right? Like how things have changed from Isaac Newton to now. But I really love your advice, because especially with community, right? What you're doing with Hacking HR and just being around people that are in that same mindset of learning, right? And getting to know others in the industry and other industries, yeah, to cross-pollinate, as you mentioned. And I mean, it's so true, right? Start small, right? 5% of your time, a video or a blog, whatever it is, right? Like, just start small and it'll, just like how technology, right? Start small and then it gets to an inflection point.
Yeah.
Same with your learning.
You become an avid reader and mm-hmm. you know, once again, the reality is all of these things that we're discussing about, they are doable. Mm-hmm. You don't need money. No. You don't need permission. Nobody has to give you permission to put 1 hour of your time in your phone while you are, you know, in the bathroom. If you want to be in the bathroom, just looking at that video, right? Nobody has to give you permission to go to LinkedIn or to the Hacking HR Lab or whatever it is to reach out to somebody else and say, hey, I'm going to reach out to that guy because he's done some stuff that I want to do. I want to ask him or her how they did it, right? Nobody prevents you from doing that. You don't need permission from anybody. Make it happen. One of the things that pains me the most is to see people comfortable in the place where they are. And you know, it pains me because I think they are making a gigantic mistake by thinking that what is happening in the world will not happen to them, and it will.
It will. It'll happen eventually, right? If you get too comfortable.
Yeah.
Now, with that in mind, I know we talked about from the perspective of individual contributor, right? But what about the perspective from an organization, right? If I'm an HR leader, besides the things that you already mentioned, what is one thing that I should be looking out for to make sure that my workforce is prepared, resilient, adaptable, flexible, and that they're always thriving, right? What is one thing, besides what you mentioned, right? Like the 5%, the community, what's one thing that I, as a leader in the organization, I should be looking out for?
You know, if there was one thing, I mean, I could say many things, but if there was one thing, this is what I would say: create the formal and informal avenues for people to exchange information and to cross-pollinate ideas from different areas of expertise. And I am not just talking about HR. I am talking across the board in the organization. Create the formal and informal avenues for this to happen. The formal avenues could be, you know, town hall meetings, sessions where everybody comes together, not to hear from the president of the company, but to tell the president of the company what's happening in the world, or to exchange ideas with each other, with leaders sitting in each table, whether online tables or physical tables, you know, sitting together and discussing about what they are seeing in the world and how those things may affect the workforce and the purpose of that organization. So that would be formal. But informal, it would be something along the lines of creating a culture where people are not afraid of reaching out to others in other departments to say, hey, you work in finance. You know, I just looked at this thing that had to do with finance. I don't understand it that much, but I just wanted to bring it up because it may have an impact on the work that we're doing, or it may help you do it better. So that kind of informality of the interactions that happen at work is incredibly powerful. Because once again, going back to what I said before, nobody controls or can have a finger or the pulse on all the information that is created about anything in life anymore. So what better than maximizing the opportunities for collisions, cross-pollination, interactions at work, both formal and informal. So I would be, if I was a leader, I would find the ways to make this happen.
I love it. So create opportunities for people to collaborate. I think that's,
formally and informally within the organization and even outside the organization as well, of course. But as a leader, you know, perhaps your priority would be, you know, making it happen within your, the confines of your organization.
Yeah. No, I think that's so valuable. Now, Enrique, I wanted to shift gears with, talk a bit about tech, right? Because tech, it's everywhere these days, right? Even in HR. What are some of the technologies that you are excited about as it relates to HR?
Well, without necessarily naming any specific, company, I think, you know, it excites me that with, you know, artificial intelligence, we will be, we can potentially be able to sort of optimize some processes for which we are not good at, right? I mean, transactions and, you know, paperwork, documentation, and more transactional work. That is really exciting because if we do the things right, and I'm hoping that we do the things right, if an organization has Enrique and all Enrique is doing is answering the phone every day to respond transactional questions and a chatbot can do that, maybe I'm going to ask Enrique, you know what? Now you don't have to respond to 50 calls every day to respond questions that are in the employee handbook and can be responded by a chatbot in seconds. What I want you to do is that instead of focusing on the 50 calls a day, I want you to talk to 5 people a day, but make sure that you're making a difference in their lives of those employees when you talk to them, meaning asking them what they need, how you can support them, being there for them, creating the platform and the infrastructure for them to succeed and thrive at work. So then my work becomes the real human development, people-centered kind of work, not the BS responding phone calls like a call center kind of thing, which can be done by technology. No, no, no. I'm focusing now on truly optimizing human relationships and I'm making sure that the business succeeds because people are doing well and they are succeeding. So that's a very different thing. So that comes because automation and artificial intelligence will give us that opportunity. And it is already giving that opportunity to many companies. I'm hoping that it becomes more prevalent and cheaper, you know, so that more companies can do some of that.
I love that. And yeah, you know, having AI and the new technology take care of the transaction, right? And that frees up time for HR to develop people, right? Put people first as it should, right? So yeah, no, that's exciting. And so many companies out there, I think are already on doing that, right?
They are.
So now let's have two more questions here. But I want to talk about failures. Like I said, I'm a big believer that failures can teach us more than success can. And I wanted to ask you if you have a favorite failure of yours that taught you a lot and that shifted your mindset or your perspective.
Many, you know, I'm failing a little bit every day. I prefer the small, you know, continuous failures that are big, messy one, right? Which comes together with taking risks. You know, I think when I was way younger, you know, I was really perhaps, you know, too direct to the point of borderline with being aggressive in my approach to, you know, human relationships. And that hurt. Some of my relationships with my own family, with my friends, with potential colleagues, and it's been through the you know, hitting walls when this happened that I realized, you know, maybe this is not the way, right? And even today, you know, I mean, it's not that I don't get upset at people or at things, which, because I do, and I get frustrated, and I, you know, I want to write an email saying like, go to hell, but I don't do that. You know? So what I do now is, you know, I try to be very mindful about other people's journeys and where they're coming from. And that doesn't, you know, I don't think this generally comes naturally to a lot of people, you know, that, you know, let me sit down and, you know, reread my email to make sure that I'm being correct and understanding. I think, you know, you got to make an intentional decision for this to be that way. Right. And I try to, you know, when I'm writing something, I reread it and I stop myself from like, this is not good. You know, I mean, sometimes I still make the failure of, or the mistake of not really thinking what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. But then I have to pick up the pieces, and that's not easy. So to me, that's been perhaps what's taught me a lot. You know, it is, you know, be careful, be mindful, be understanding. You don't know some of the people's journeys, and they may be going through a very hard time, and now you're going to add some harder time by being, you know, so aggressive with an email or with a message or something. And so I'm going to say that perhaps it's been my main area of everyday work, because I continue to work on that in myself basically every day.
Yeah, that's same with me, to be honest. That's something that I work on every day, especially that now that we're remote, right? I'm communicating every day via email, whether it's a voice note or video, but mostly emails, right? It can be misinterpreted depending on how many exclamation points you had to.
Yeah. You know, I invited people to speak at the conference, and there were some people that I really wanted to have. They never responded to my invitation, unfortunately, but I sent them like, you know, 4 or 5 LinkedIn messages. And the last one, it's funny because when I sent it, you know, 3 or 4 months ago, the headline says of the last message in capital letters with an exclamation point at the end, please be a speaker. The way I originally intended the message to come out was, please be a speaker for a conference.
Right.
But when I'm reading it now, 3 months later, it sounded like, please be a speaker. You have to be a speaker. So it made me think like, you know, I'm guessing that I probably burned some bridges in there, and I'm going to have to pick up some pieces, because, you know, that message could be misinterpreted in a way that I didn't intend it to be. Mm-hmm. But, you know, now me, myself, reading it again, I'm reading something completely different from what I had in mind back then. So yeah, you got to be very mindful about your messages and your writing style and whatnot.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now, to close it off, I wanted to ask you, especially because you mentioned this, right? Like read something every day, one video. What is one thing that you're reading now? It could be a course, a book, or a YouTube video that you saw. What is something that you would recommend to the audience to check it out?
Well, I don't know if I would recommend, because I'm developing the Hacking HR Lab. Mm-hmm. I have gotten involved very much into the programming. Mm. I'm not a programmer. That's not an area that I find any joy or any interest in. But I've been learning about, you know, Heroku, GitHub, React, you know, user interface and user experience design. So all of those things are really funny, because they are awesome skills to have. I'm not saying that people have to become a programmer, but developing a technology platform, it's not easy. Mm-hmm. So I think that's, I'm not reading anything about it necessarily, only when something happens that I have to read, like, okay, now what do I do? Right? How do I explain this to my programmers so that they understand what I'm saying, and how do I understand them? So I think that's the one thing that I've been dedicating most time recently, because, well, you know, I need to make sure that this lab really, really works well.
Yeah.
And in terms of books, you know, I got a bunch of books in there that I happen to read a little bit of, you know, one, and then I move to another one, and then I go back to the one that I was reading before, depending on the mood. I was just finishing reading actually the book, The Great Influenza. The name of the author is John Campbell. John Gary. Mm-hmm. And the book about the influenza of 1918. Mm-hmm. And it's just fascinating. It's fascinating to read what happened in 1918 when we had nothing like we had today, right? And so you can tell that I really like to get my hands into
many things
that have to do nothing with what I do for work. You know, I love reading books about evolution and human evolution. And, you know, I love them. You know, they really help. And neuroscience is another of my favorite topics. So, you know, I read a little bit of everything basically every day.
You're the second person to recommend The Great Influenza. So I'm definitely going to check it out because
it's good.
I've heard that it has a lot of similarities to what we're going through now.
Very much so, except back then we didn't have the technology, but there's a lot of the same. So that's what I was talking about before, being prepared for things that we know are going to happen again. I mean, by the way, this is not the you know, COVID is not the next pandemic after 1918. It's the worst pandemic after 1918, mm-hmm. but there have been other pandemics going around. So, you know, anyway, you know, we got to learn from the past.
Absolutely. And Enrique, to close it off, what would be one of your takeaways to leave the audience with, and that you would really want them to absorb from our conversation today?
Yeah, I would tell people, you know, believe that the things that are affecting others could potentially affect you or impact you, not necessarily affect you as in a negative connotation, but impact you. Make sure that you're investing in yourself. You got to invest in yourself. There's this great leadership guru and, you know, Jim Rohn. And Jim Rohn used to say, don't invest in you as an employee. Invest in you and the skills that will make you employable, because it's different. Mm. You invest in yourself just as an employee of a given company that you invest in yourself to be employable going forward. So invest in yourself. Don't see these things as opportunities that your company has to give you to learn or to grow. If you happen to come across a leader or a company that are giving you opportunities for learning, growth, development, you are in a great place. But more often than not, that's not the reality. So that means that you are going to have to sit in the driver's seat, not wait for anybody to tell you, sister, here is the course that I'm paying as a company for you to take. Don't wait for that. You sit in the driver's seat and invest in yourself. Learn.
Enrique, thank you so much for being on the show. And I really love that we're closing off with that. Yeah, I agree with you. Invest in yourself. And don't wait, right? Take that into your own hands.
Yep. And thank you.
I really enjoyed this episode, and I'm really looking forward to having you on future episodes, catching up with how Hacking HR went and any other projects that you might have with you. But for now, thank you so much, and I really appreciate you.
Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Ivy Podcast. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast listening platform. We really appreciate that effort. Until next time.